Hey, what's going on, good people? It's Gardner Douglas Show, Oyster Ninja. I'm here with Miss Doreen Rivers, and we are talking oysters. We're talking life. We're talking Schlafly Oyster Festival here in St. Louis. And I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. I met Miss Doreen a few years ago, maybe more than a few years, maybe 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah, so before COVID for sure. Always a great person, a great spirit to be around. And I wanted to bring her on the podcast just to get to know her a little bit more than oysters and talk to her and have a great conversation. Miss Doreen, how are you?
Well, I am well. I hope everyone out there is as well.
So, again, we're here at Schlafly Stout and Oyster Festival in St. Louis, and we are gearing up for a great evening, couple evenings. With 100,000 oysters, 20 shuckers. No, it's not 100,000, but it's pretty close to it. 70,000 oysters. 20 oyster shuckers from the East Coast, West Coast, and No Coast. And Miss Doreen, what brought you into this oyster life?
Freak accident. So it all started. When Trace and I lived in Morehead City, North Carolina, and we were shucking oysters on our patio and having a discussion, and that had been my first time shucking oysters, and he took a picture. He's like, her bowl's almost as full as my bowl, and I was like, okay. And then out of that conversation, we started NC Oyster 365.
So thank you for bringing that up. So, of course, Trace has been on the podcast talking about that. But can you just enlighten the listeners a little bit and tell us, you know, what that is and what it's about?
So NC Oyster 365 has many parts to it. On one end, we do events at breweries, wine shops, vineyards, private parties, office parties. We're there to be hired. The other part is we try to market North Carolina oysters to different areas of the country, also throughout North Carolina, because there's parts of North Carolina that doesn't carry a North Carolina oyster on their list. And we also are branching out into a nonprofit, and our goal is to do some charity work, get some oyster events happening, and a five-species oyster event in our area, since we did one down at Atlantic Beach in North Carolina.
Nice. That's awesome. So just tell me a little about you. Where'd you grow up? How was your upbringing? Like, let me find out about you.
Well, everyone asks me, you know, where are you from? I tell them I'm a mutt. So I was born in New York. I left when I was about 11, and then I moved to Charleston, South Carolina, did all of my primary growing up there, and so I called myself the mutt, another northern and southern. People just kind of chuckle at that, but it's the truth. I don't know. I had an average family, a mom, a dad. I have two more sisters and a brother. I am the baby. I am the oops baby. Okay. And almost born in a taxi cab. Yeah, my mom was taking my siblings because they were in middle school when my mom was pregnant with me. And she was going to take them to Coney Island and went into labor and had to hail a cab. So I was that close to being born in a taxi cab.
Wow. That's a good way to start this. That's a good way to come into the world. So let's hear it.
So when my mom was pregnant, they didn't know she was pregnant, and she kept going to the doctor. And at the last minute, they said, oh, okay, you have a tumor, and that tumor needs to be removed. And they had scheduled an appointment for her to come back to have this tumor removed. And then at the last minute, the doctor said, let me give you one more pregnancy test. And then that tumor was me. So, wow. My family will call me for my birthday and say, happy birthday, tumor, because it's not a tumor. But yeah, that was me.
I've never heard that before. It's the first time for everything. So, okay. So I know we were talking earlier and you say you were big into athletics and just being healthy and fit, right?
Yes. I was always that weird kid. Like when I was younger, I'm dating myself. When Jane Fonda was doing exercise video, I begged my mom, Mom, I need this video. And she was like, I was like, can I have it for my birthday? And she's like, that's what you want? And I was like, yes, that's all I want. And I was the happiest kid ever. So I was always the one that wanted to exercise. I always loved to swim. I loved being in the gym. I'm just that person. And always watch what I ate and didn't drink a lot. So it was kind of random when my cancer diagnosis came in 2019, because people still don't understand. They were like, but you don't eat junk. I was like, I don't know. I'm just that lucky person. But I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma in October 14th of 2019.
Yeah. We'll come back to that. How did you get into this seafood oyster world?
Really via Trace. I had no clue, you know, other than eating them and enjoying them when, you know, growing up in Charleston. Trace really introduced me to this culture, and I've learned a lot. I'm still learning a lot. Compared to everyone else, I'm still a newbie, you know, and I joke with Kimmy and call myself the temp. And but I've learned a lot. My skills have improved. I learned different techniques. I hope to learn some more. And it's a great culture to be a part of. It really
is. I can definitely agree to that. It's nothing like the oyster culture. I always say, you know, oysters have opened so many doors for me personally. And it's not, my story is not my story. My story is everybody's story. You know, everybody is like, you know, because of oysters, this, you know, because I was at this place fooling with oysters, now I'm here doing this, you know? So let's, how many years have you been coming to the Schlafly's Stout and Oyster?
Just to the festival, about 4 or 5 years. But as a shucker, this would be my second year as a shucker at the Stout Festival, Stout and Oyster Festival, excuse me.
And what's the craziest thing you ever seen from the shuckers or the people?
Just one.
All right, nothing we can talk about.
More than likely, I'm going through the Rolodex and I'm like, nah. It's very interesting. It can be very colorful, but always funny.
Always funny.
Always fun.
Nice. So you grew up in Charleston, and you're based out of where now?
Durham, North Carolina.
Well, just, let's go back to the cancer diagnosis. First of all, because you told me the story, I don't know if you want to share that, but like, just tell, like, it's been a process.
Yeah. And it's still a working process. So in my case, I'll try to give the Cliff Notes version. I was getting these weird bruises, different parts of my arm. They didn't stay long. They would leave in a matter of 24 hours. I was moving, so I didn't think anything of it until I saw this huge bruise on the right side of my torso. And I was like, it looked like someone beat me up in my sleep. And I did go to urgent care. They said, oh, it's because you're moving and you're straining your muscles and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, sounds accurate. But I would also have pain in my torso. I was given some pain relief medication, helped a little bit, but gradually it did not improve. It got to the point where it felt like a vice was on my torso and someone was just tightening it. And I couldn't deal with it. So I was like, I have to go see what's going on with me. And Trey said, we're going to the hospital, because I was thinking maybe go back to urgent care. Opened up the passenger door and didn't feel my legs. And I was like, Trace, I don't feel my legs. And he's like, what? Like they're asleep. I was like, no, I don't feel them. And as I said that, I started heading towards the ground. So I grabbed the door in the top of the car to try to brace myself. But of course, I have nothing to brace myself with. So he managed to get me in the car and off to the emergency room.
And once you got to the emergency room, what happened?
Pandemonium. So I was heavily sedated because I was in a lot of pain. I had a scan and I was trying to tell the scan technician I can't stand up. And he thought I was just, you know, not being proactive with standing. And I kept saying, no, I can't stand up. And he was like, you could do it. You could do it. And it's like, I can't. I guess you need convincing. So he picks me up and tries to stand me up in the direction of the scan. And I started to plank and I was heading for the floor. And then he was like, oh, you can't stand up. And I was like, kind of told you that, but
right,
you know. And then after my scan, honestly, I was lights out because I had a lot of pain medicine. And when I woke up briefly, I was on a gurney in a room with a gentleman here, Trace here, and two ladies on the opposite of the bed. And I just kind of opened up my eyes and I was like, okay, people. And when I did open up my eyes, the gentleman was like, you have cancer. You're going to surgery. And I was so sedated. I was like, okay. And then they were like, no, you can't go to sleep. You have to sign these papers. And then all I remember is going down the hallway, the lights on the ceiling and approaching double doors. And that was it. And when I did wake up after my surgery, I woke up to six surgeons at the foot of my bed and neuro ICU at Duke. So
now in this surgery, what were they doing?
In my case, the pain was coming from my cancer tumor was wedging between my T6 and my T7 vertebrae. It actually broke my vertebrae. So if you look at my vertebrae, it looks like a mouth with a missing tooth because I no longer have a T7. So it was trying to, you know, wedge his way in, broke it off. And they said, one of the surgeons was like, yeah, that was completely dust. That's all that was left. So in my case, I was dealing with cancer, a spinal cord injury, and paralysis all at the same time.
Here you are. Can you talk about that journey from there to here?
That is a long journey. So after the surgery, I was in ICU for a little bit, about a week. Week and a half, then they moved me to the cancer ward at Duke. I stayed there for a month and a half. While there, I started working with therapists, an occupational therapist and a physical therapist, because in my case, with the spinal cord injury and the cancer, it affects my entire body. Like I mentioned to you earlier, because I have a spinal cord injury, it takes my body longer to regulate heat and cold. Mm-hmm. So I get cold really fast, and it takes a long time. If my body's hot, it takes a long time for my body to cool off and get to a regular, calibrate to a regular level where I, you know, it's just comfortable. My injury affects my nerves. So you'll see me throughout the festival squeezing a little blood drop. So I have to do my little exercises for my hands because it affects my, I actually have arthritis in this finger, but because I have a spinal cord injury, it affects my nerves in my hands. the nerves in my feet. It took me about almost 2 years to learn how to walk again. That was interesting. So I had to start, I had to learn everything. And at first I had to learn everything from the position of someone in a wheelchair. And I'm a believer, and I'm not asking anyone else to be a believer, but I had a moment in the hospital where I had this voice tell me that I will walk again, and I just believed it. And it said, don't worry, you'll walk again. And it just, I don't know why I believed it, but I believed it. And with me, I always told myself, don't get in your head, because you won't work. You'll start feeling sorry for yourself, you know. And even my doctors, when they would come in, they were like, how do you do it? And I was like, I try not to get in my head, because I decided I'm going to be the best I can be at whichever level I'm going to end up.
Right.
And so that was my goal. So if I'm going to be in this chair, I'm going to learn how to operate and maneuver from this chair, you know. And I did, you know, I had this, it's funny because Trace wants to make it into a skateboard, but my version of legs was this plank that had handles on two ends. It's a slide board. So that was my means of getting from point A to point B. I had to learn how to use it because I didn't trust my body. And, you know, my therapist would try to get me to do things, and it was kind of difficult. I did it, but I didn't trust my body because, you know, my legs gave out on me. So I'm like, that can happen at any moment. So I was really scared. It took me a long time to trust my body again. But I did. And so once I got out of the cancer unit in Duke, I went to a Duke physical therapy ward in another hospital, and I was there for a month and a half. So from the time I was diagnosed to Christmas Eve of 2019, I was in a hospital setting. So 3 months of being in the hospital, again, learning the basics, how to sit up. I had to learn how to sit up again because I was like a gazelle. I would just fall over like a newborn baby. And oh my God, when my nerves started to kick back in.
What was that like? Is it scary?
No, it's painful. Ooh. So like, I'll never forget this. So when I was starting, because I was paralyzed from my navel down. Mm-hmm. So what I was called is a T7 incomplete. There's two types of paralysis, complete and incomplete. Complete is basically everything. Mm-hmm. Incomplete is usually from like this part of your body down. And so I was a T7 incomplete. So I was paralyzed from basically my pelvis down. And so I had to learn how to sit up, which took some time. I had to learn to use the slide board. I had to learn to use brush my teeth from a lower level. And what I learned so much. And that's another charity I want to get into, helping people with wheelchairs. My main goal, what I really desire to do before it's all said and done, I would like to buy some land and make housing for people in wheelchairs. Because when you're in a wheelchair, and of course you don't think about it because you're able-bodied and you're walking around. But when you're in a wheelchair, everything's different. So even though the stove is right here, it's still too high for you.
Right.
And you stand the chance of burning yourself because you're not high enough. So everything, the cabinets, were too high. It took me a long time to try to figure out how to do anything in the kitchen. For a long time, I couldn't. And Trey set up a little burner and a little setup for me to make tea and everything in our living room because everything was out of my reach. People do not look down when you're in a wheelchair. So, you know, they'll just bump into you or they'll just stand there and you're looking at their rear end and you're like, please move. It was difficult. I had an experience, Trace and I had an experience trying to go to Charleston, and I had to literally go to three different bathrooms because even though it says handicapped, my wheelchair didn't fit in two of them. So, and when you're a person that's just beginning to feel your nerves in your bladder again, you know, I can't hold it at this point. Not trying to be too graphic, but you know, that's a real thing, you know, and no one should have to go through that. And, you know, when you're in a wheelchair, especially if it says, you know, wheelchair accessible, and I couldn't get through the door. And so that particular stall was for people with walkers. You know, so there's a lot that you have to think about. And what I would really like to do is buy a plot of land and build like five houses for people and get them customized for people in wheelchairs.
Well, I'm glad, so glad that you are such a strong-minded person, strong-willed person, spiritual person. to see you come out, I mean, like, even because I can remember, you know, when Trey was making posts on Facebook, I'm like, God dang, you know, you never imagine somebody you know,
that it's just random, you know, you never know.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad to see you here right now with me, and we're gonna shuck some oysters tonight, we're gonna have a good time. But I also, the last thing I want to talk about is you spoke a little bit about that that bag that your friend gave you, and you want to do something similar to that.
Yes. So my friend Jen, my childhood friend, and I'm going to see her Saturday. When I was in the cancer ward, she had mailed me a bag, a book bag. The book bag that I carry with me today, you know, for the festival. So in that bag, it had Tums, it had plastic wear, it had like this baby cream, just all these things. And I'm like, you know, I just newly diagnosed. So I'm looking at all this stuff and I'm like, what? And I'm like, Jen, there's no way I'm going to use all this stuff. And I did. I wound up using it because the plastic wear, when you're a cancer patient, and your treatments can give you a metallic taste in your mouth. So if you use regular cutlery, it's just like sucking on a penny. So a lot of times we have to get plasticware to eat, to not experience, because we get that metal taste in our mouth. Tums, because, you know, the medication can upset your stomach, make you nauseous, you know, just give you GI issues. She gave me these little, they're called preggers, and they look like candies. But it's like a holistic treatment for nausea. So I would suck on those. She gave me a water bottle. And I'm like, why did you give me a water bottle? We always have to drink water. We have to stay. It's important that we stay hydrated. It's key. Even in treatments, you know, you get Gatorade or you get water while you're having your treatment. So I would like, you know, I wasn't expecting anything. I was just telling my friend, you know, I have cancer now. And she happens to be a nurse. But she gave me this bag and I was like, I don't know what I would do. You know, I didn't know what I would need or anything. And she was just gracious enough to think about me and give me this bag. So I would like to start a friend bag and give to newly diagnosed cancer patients, because you don't have any idea, you know, as simple as plastic wear. You would just think that I can eat with my regular, you know, forks and knives, but it gets to be too much, and it will get, like I said, like sucking on a penny. And, you know, the medicines can make you queasy, makes you tired. So, you know, it's just little things to kind of help you cope and get through it. And like these little bands that they have, that you can get them in the drugstore. They'll touch your pressure point, helps you with nausea. So, I mean, there's things. And I would like to, like I said, I would like to, since someone was gracious enough to think about me and love me as a person and as a friend, to think about me during my diagnosis, I would like to do that for other people, because you really just don't know when you're newly diagnosed, and you don't know up and down. You're trying to just process the fact that you have cancer. You were healthy yesterday, and now you have this thing where your body's fighting against itself. And that's a lot to deal with. But, you know, if you have someone, at least one person, that's just gracious enough to think about you, just help you, you know, in little ways, it means a lot. It means a lot, especially when you're trapped in the hospital for months and months. For someone to just think about you like that, it uplifts you.
Well, thank you for uplifting me. No, seriously, I mean,
too much.
Just the seriousness. I mean, thank you. Thank you for being that positive light that, you know, we can draw from inspiration and draw, and you're inspiring people, and you want to help more people. And that's just a awesome story. You're awesome. And so, yeah, for sure. So where can people follow NC Oyster, and, you know, what would be, if you have any events or anything coming up, shout it out.
So, yeah, when we get back to North Carolina, we're going to start full blast. So we have an Instagram page, NCO_365. We have a Facebook page, NC Oyster 365, or at the Napa Valley at Oysters. We list all our events on both social medias. Come out, have a good time, decompress, come with some friends, you know, chit chat over a beverage and have some great oysters. You know, it's always, we go to really cool venues. So, and we partner with some really good people. So it's always a good time. And, you know, it's usually music or music trivia. So it's always a good time. It's like a little network that we build, and we have people that was like, can you come to so-and-so? I was like, sure. We'll reach out and see if they'll have us. So that's where a big bulk of our path has led us, from people just recommending different venues or wanting us to come in their area because they don't have anything, you know. So God willing, we'll keep it up. But once we get back, we're off to it. We're going to be in Steel String in Carrboro on Thursday with Music Bingo. We're going to be Wise Men in Winston-Salem on Friday. So we have a lot going on when we get back.
Well, thank you again. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all for listening.